the powerhouse of Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to Together in Spirit with host, teacher, healer, and author Indigo Ocean. In the next hour, Indigo and her guests will take you on a journey of self-understanding and evolutionary inspiration. So turn up your speakers and get connected. Here's your host, Indigo Ocean.
Hello, this is Indigo Ocean. Welcome to Together in Spirit. My guest today is Zen teacher Sherry Huber, who will be talking to us about Zen meditation and peacemaking within ourselves and within our world. First, I want to share with you this week's poem from the 14th century mystic poet Hafiz. It's called Imagination Does Not Exist. You should come close to me tonight, wayfarer, for I will be celebrating you. Your beauty still causes me madness, keeps the neighbors complaining when I start shouting in the middle of the night because I can't bear all this joy. I will be giving birth to sons. I will be holding forests upside down, gently shaking soft animals from trees and burrows into my lap. What you conceive as imagination does not exist for me. Whatever you can do in a dream or on your mind canvas, my hands can pull alive from my coat pocket. But let's not talk about my divine world, for what I want most tonight is to know all about you. That's Hafiz writing to us from the 14th century. And Sherry, what I want most right now is to know all about you. Welcome to Together in Spirit.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Sherry, I do know a little about you already. I know that you're the founder and resident teacher at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in California and at the Palo Alto Zen Center, mm-hmm. and that you're also the founder of Living Compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about compassion and peace.
Okay.
Let's lay the groundwork for people and for me.
Okay.
I'm people, too.
Right.
Tell me what is really happening within a person when they feel what they call peace.
Well, that is one of the most interesting questions possible.
Oh, good.
Yes, yes. It really, and it's profound and insightful, and I really wish more people were asking it. When I first got interested in peace as an issue, it was, I didn't really know what I was talking about. And I quickly discovered that neither did anyone else. They didn't know what I was talking about, and they weren't talking about it, and it continues to be the case with peace. And I am convinced that we don't have peace precisely because nobody knows what it is. Mm. I have asked countless, numerous people all over this planet about peace, and the most common reaction is just kind of stopping and getting this confused look, and then getting to something like, you know, I've never really thought about it. Mm-hmm. So people think about peace as the absence of war. Mm-hmm. So people who are for peace will protest war. Okay. But what is peace actually? What is peace on an individual basis? What's peace within a family, within a community, within the world? Not the absence of war, but the active, actual experience of peace.
Now, is it a different answer for different people, or is it that we just, there's one answer and we just don't know what it is?
Well, I think that it's actually the same answer for everybody, and we have many, many ways of expressing it. This is one of the ways that I talk about it, that peace is what's there when we stop doing everything else. So another way of expressing that would be that peace is our authentic nature. Peace is what animates us. And it's what animates everything. Now, people who belong to a theistic orientation to life would say, so you're saying peace is God. Now, as a Buddhist, my take on that is that would point us in an other direction. So there's us, and then there's God.
Right, it's the dualistic idea of...
That's right. So if we say that, no. If we can say there's nothing that isn't God, then I would say, yes, that's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So when we are present, when we are still, when we are here in capital letters, okay, not separate from life, not with a clear mind, not, you know, in some created orientation to life, but when we are present in non-separate existence, the experience, a word that we could use to describe that experience would be peace. Mm-hmm. I would say that another word we could use would be compassion.
And that's another word that, you know...
I know.
You know, because a lot of people have their own personal definitions of it, but they're using the word, but they're not actually communicating the same thing to each other.
That's
right.
Which happens a lot because, you know, this, to me, this is a fundamental difficulty that people run into that creates the need for awareness practice. So we kind of go around in life and we figure that we know what things mean.
Right.
And
we get into arguments because we're not agreeing, and it's like, well, actually, if we were using different words, we might be agreeing.
Precisely. Precisely. And we don't stop to say, now, what do you mean by that? It's just, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
No, I don't agree with you. Dualism, the word you just used, dualism is maintained in that me, you, opposite point of view, us, them, right, wrong, good, bad, orientation to life. And so that ego, that illusion of a separate self that most of us are stuck in most of the time, that's the source of all of our suffering, you know, it's constantly adversarial. It's oppositional. And so, you know, the really well-tuned mind is one that can find something wrong with everything. So I listen to what you say, and when I'm in that ego mind, I'm listening, saying, well, now that's not quite, no, she's wrong about it. I don't agree with that. No, that's not true. I could. Instead of when we get back to our authentic nature or to our heart, when we're really here, when we're in that place of non-separation, then I'm listening to you to see how we are saying the same thing, because we're obviously having the same experience because we are one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's something that I'm just learning myself, you know, right now, and I'm seeing that tendency in myself sometimes that it's like ego wants to define itself.
Yes.
And it can only define itself through contrast, so it's always looking for those contrasts to say,
yes,
well, you know, here I am, I'm different, not only that, I'm better.
That's right. That's it. And that's where ego is living all the time, right? Okay, well, I'm not as good as she is, but I'm better than he is. You know, well, I don't have as much money as they do, but I have more money than they do. I'm not as important. And that's the world that it's living in, just constantly defining itself in contrast to. So then if we take it into the realm that I'm so passionate about, what I call self-hatred, then there's ego maintaining itself through this conversation of what's wrong with me, what's wrong with you, what's wrong with them, what's wrong with it. And it's not a happy way to live, and it doesn't create a happy world.
And so it's the same mental construct, if you will, that is both self-hatred and criticism of everything outside ourselves?
Yes, Yeah, it just goes back and forth in that dualistic way. You know, first it's criticizing me for what I said, what I did, how I look, how, you know, constantly going over what's wrong with me, and then it turns to you. Look at that, I can't, and then it will actually beat me up for criticizing you.
So the two always go, it's like the bittersweet.
Yeah.
The bitter always with the sweet, the sweet always with the bitter.
Yeah, yep. And so, yeah, somebody's getting it all the time. In conditioned mind, when we are in that conditioned ego, separate from life, survival kind of mode, when we're identified with that, that's what it's doing. It's basically saying, I'm not that. And what we're doing, of course, with awareness practice is attempting to see that for what it is and to realize that what can see that from a place of compassion is our authentic nature.
Okay, so compassion again. What is compassion?
Yeah, it's like, what is peace? And for me, it is an experience of, with no experiencer. It's living in non-separate reality. So when I try to talk about it, and of course you can't talk about it because if you talk about it, you're separate from it. Right? But when I try to point at it, then I use words like here in capital letters or this in capital letters to try to indicate just here. And so it's an acceptance of everything as it is with no one accepting it. So there's a non-resistance. There's an allowing. So one of the easiest ways to experience it is just breathing. You know, we turn all of our attention to the breath, and as we breathe in and out, everything is as it is. There's no resistance to any of it. We don't need to have an opinion. One of my favorite old Zen sayings is, don't seek enlightenment, simply cease to cherish opinions.
That's one of my favorites, too. I love that one.
Yeah.
I think, is it Master Sungstan?
Yeah. And so, you know, there we are. If we're in that place of this, just here, whole mind, non-separate reality, then there's no one being created to live in resistance to, no self and other. And in that is an experience, again, that in those moments when we have it, we will talk about it as joy or bliss or peace or, and then, you know, it goes into loving kindness and acceptance and all the same experience manifesting different words depending on what's going on.
So this basic experience contains all of these things. Peace,
yes.
Compassion.
Yes.
They're not separate from one another. They're just different ways of looking at this.
Yes.
One thing.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Let's talk more about the path into this.
All right.
When we come back. We need to take a break right now. We'll be back with more with Sherry Huber, so stay tuned right after this. More of compassion, peace, and Zen.
The Authority in Internet Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you ever wonder where your life is taking you? What is your true calling? Are your relationships serving your path? Sometimes it helps to talk to a gifted advisor who can help you bring the beauty of spiritual wisdom into your own life to answer these questions and other important questions. You can find top psychic advisors on Keen. They'll give you accurate readings on relationships, health, work, whatever's on your mind. Want to talk to a psychic advisor at Keene right now? This is a great time to do it, because right now, Keene has a special deal for Together in Spirit listeners. You get a full 10-minute reading for just $1.99. You heard that right, 10 minutes for just $1.99. Call 1-800-648-1417 to talk with a psychic advisor now. That's 1-800-648-1417. Or visit beingblissbook.com for more details. You must be 18 years old and have a credit card ready. Call 1-800-648-1417. Don't struggle another day in confusion. Get help to find the answers you need now. Tune in every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Powerful Prayer with host Connie Coddington. Each week, Connie and her guests will explain the healing system called Christian Science and share stories of how they have used the spiritual laws of God to bring healing to their lives. You can learn how to bring healing to your life too. So tune in to Powerful Prayer with host Connie Coddington every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America, America's Voice.
How can you have a better life on your terms? You can have a better life because you can become better. Stop waiting for everything around you to change. Tune in every Wednesday at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time on Voice America for Life on Your Terms with David Martin. David Martin, an internationally recognized speaker, will teach you what successful people are doing. So join us Wednesday at 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time for Life on Your Terms with David Martin, right here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Bringing you around the world right from your desktop, voiceamerica.com.
Welcome back to Together in Spirit with Indigo Ocean. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free 1-866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Indigo.
Hi, welcome back to Together in Spirit. We're speaking today with Zen teacher Sherry Huber. And if you want to call in and ask a question, again, that number is 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. So, Sherry, before we went out to the break, we were talking about compassion and peace and this experience of this, you know, what is here, regardless of the different shades of it we might be talking about. And you had said some things about moving into that, and you talked about just being with the breath. Now, what I noticed as you were talking about that, and I was doing it as you were talking about it, I also noticed this background irritation, too. There was a sense of peacefulness, but there was also this critic going in the background. Is that okay? Are we still doing it? Do we just let that happen?
Well, see, in awareness practice, that's the perfect experience to be having. One of the difficulties that I run into as a meditation teacher is that people have so many ideas about what meditation is. And one of the worst is clearing the mind. So people sit down to pay attention to what's going on. And if there's anything other than sitting there with just this blank slate, the voice is there telling them that they're doing it wrong. Now, almost everybody is completely conditioned to listen to and believe the voice, okay, that critic, okay? So you're breathing, and you are noticing that there's going on in the background. In my world, we sit down and sit still, in large part, especially in the beginning, to hear and see that process of conditioning for what it is. So if you had, you know, you're walking around in the land of Big Brother, and there's this subliminal information that's going on, this kind of brainwashing information that's going on. It's piped in through the air conditioning, and, you know, it's in your car, and it's and that's how you're being controlled. Can you picture that?
Okay.
All right. Well, that's actually what conditioned mind is like. It operates just under the radar screen, and it's constantly telling us who we are, what's good, what's not, what's right, what's wrong, what's worthwhile, what's valuable. It's interpreting how we feel, telling us how we should feel, what we've done. Okay? And it's going all the time.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Yeah. And
it just warms that up.
Yeah, people are conditioned to believe that that's them thinking. But it's not them thinking. And the only way to realize that is to sit down and be still and to have the experience that, okay, so I'll own this. Now, I sit down and I'm still, and I'm the one sitting down being still and paying attention. And what I'm aware of is there's this soundtrack going on. There's this voice actually talking to me.
Right.
Okay? This is a big moment.
Even when you say, I don't want to hear it, go to sleep.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yes.
We've already talked about this 1,000 times.
Yeah.
For the rest.
Yeah. That's it. You know, until we cross it, first of all, as stated, almost nobody knows that it's going on. Then the person says, you know, gets hooked up with this kind of stuff we're messing with and goes, oh, my God, there's a voice in my head. Okay? And then usually for most people the next step is to take it personally. Oh, my God, what's wrong with me? There's this crazy voice in my head saying all of these awful things all the time. Okay? So when we sit down and we sit still and we realize that what we actually are is the awareness that can be aware of all of this, then it actually doesn't matter that that loop is going on. It's a brainwashing loop, but it only works if you're not attending to it, if you don't know it's there. If you do know it's there, it moves into sort of the category of a radio playing or, you know, this Muzak that we're obsessed with in this culture, you know, where you always have to have something going on in the background. I think that it's done because it simulates what goes on inside the mind.
And maybe tries to drown it out for people a little.
Yes. I would suspect that that's the case. It's very like what people are used to. You know, there's just always noise going on. Yeah. What we catch on to, though, is that it is not benign noise. And we start hearing it saying, you know, I can't believe you said that, and what's the matter with you, and you need to do this, and oh, my God, what's going to happen with that? And this is what they're thinking. And okay, and so we begin to, as we watch it more, we realize that if we don't pay attention to it, in the sense of kind of keeping an eye on it, then it's going to sort of slide into the back of our brain, and it's going to take its position in the pilot seat, and it's going to start running our lives.
Now, actually, as you're saying this, and I'm thinking, you know, how I was responding when you first started talking about it, and now I'm wondering, Is even the voice that argues with the voice still the voice?
Absolutely. Bingo. Excellent point. It's kind of like it's like a child, although again it's not benign. If we listen to it for a while, we realize that it's got some pretty nasty information that's going on. But it's arguing, it's doing what it's doing, and then in order to keep you from just disregarding it, it'll take over the job of getting rid of itself.
Oh, my God.
So an awful lot of self-improvement is just the voice, the conditioned voice of ego, turning into somebody who is going to improve the conditioned voice of ego. And now, you know, it's like two kids squabbling. They've got your attention all the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what makes, in my world, that's what makes the sitting, the meditation so important. Because when we're meditating, if, you know, again, now it's going to say, well, you should be doing this and you should be doing that and you're not really doing it right because you're thinking about this and those voices are, and what we're doing when we sit is just catching on to the whole thing, how all of that identity maintenance is held in place. We're not trying to have a particular experience. We're just seeing how it all works. And in stepping back from it in that way, that's where we find freedom.
So just being with it. I mean, never mind that I would really rather be going to sleep.
That's right.
1 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
If it's running, just let it run.
If you're just there and you're breathing, you know, you're just with the breath and allowing the body to relax and and accepting that all of this is going. Now, you don't have to engage with it. Okay, so what we learn to do, there's the voice, and it knows how to hook you, doesn't it? Especially at 1 in the morning. Well, what about da-da-da-da-da? That's the time that it likes to review all the mistakes that you've made in life and go over your finances and point out how ready you are not for old age and retirement, that sort of thing. So we notice that that's where it goes, but we don't have to go there. We notice it. It's got its little hook out to hook us in and get us involved, and we just bring our attention back to the breath. Then it hooks us again, and we notice that, and we come back to the breath. And it's that coming back to the breath, accepting that all of it is what it is, just exactly as it is. We see it, we feel it, we know it, and we're just breathing. We're just with the breath.
So this is, I mean, I know in seated meditation, what you're describing is very similar to some forms of seated meditation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about it beyond that. I mean, you're saying this is like in any moment in life, this voice is going on, so this would be the response then also.
Yeah. And with Zen awareness practice, it's true. It goes, and I suppose a lot of other practices. I just don't know a lot about a lot of other practices. But it goes far beyond seated meditation. Seated meditation is where it's like batting practice. You know, you go to batting practice to learn to hit the ball, or you go to Toastmasters to learn to speak in front of groups. But what we're doing is practicing being present so that we can do that all the time. Not just when meditation is learning to be with the attention, be with awareness, be with the breath, notice what's going on, drop it, come back and be here. And we're practicing up to be in that attitude of mind all the time.
And that's why it's called seated practice.
That's right. That's exactly
they're practicing
right.
That's for real life.
That's right. We're practicing for real life. Exactly. And if we're not, then meditation, as beautiful as it is, becomes something that is used by conditioned mind. Okay, so you meditate. Why can't you should be able to handle that? That's not very, how mindful was that? You weren't present. Okay, so it's really important that we use our ability to pay attention so that we can be with the breath and paying attention all the time.
Now, there are different kinds of meditation, and we've only got like a minute before we have to go to break, so, you know, we'll see how far, you know, we can get with your answer to this. But I know that there are different kinds of meditation, like in terms of concentration meditation versus awareness meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Zen is more awareness meditation?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, because we don't see it as a timeout. We see it as preparation for practice for how we are going to be in every moment of life. So first we sit facing a blank wall, then we do walking meditation, we practice working meditation, and then we're meditating in daily life.
So in a Zen community, there's a large emphasis on maintaining that mindfulness in the daily life of the community.
All the time.
And that's really beautiful. I'd like to experience that someday.
Well, consider yourself invited anytime.
Well, we're going to have to go into break. But when we come back, I would like to talk more about, I know you're doing a number of different kinds of projects where you bring people together to learn these things and practice these things, but I'd like to find out more about that.
Great.
So, everyone, please stay tuned. We'll be back right after this with more with Sherry Heber of the Zen Center, Zen Monastery Peace Center, and Palo Alto Zen Center. Back after this.
Streaming the world over, VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you ever wonder where your life is taking you? What is your true calling? Are your relationships serving your path? Sometimes it helps to talk to a gifted advisor who can help you bring the beauty of spiritual wisdom into your own life to answer these questions and other important questions. You can find top psychic advisors on Keen. They'll give you accurate readings on relationships, health, work, whatever's on your mind. Want to talk to a psychic advisor at Keen right now? This is a great time to do it, because right now, Keen has a special deal for Together in Spirit listeners. You get a full 10-minute reading for just $1.99. You heard that right, 10 minutes for just $1.99. Call 1-800-648-1417 to talk with a psychic advisor now. That's 1-800-648-1417. Or visit beingblissbook.com for more details. You must be 18 years old and have a credit card ready. Call 1-800-648-1417. Don't struggle another day in confusion. Get help to find the answers you need now.
Join Patricia Raskin, host of Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com, Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Hello, this is Rory Garay, President of Greyhound Pets of America and host of Greyhounds Make Great Pets on Voice America. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific and 2 p.m. Eastern for an insightful and enjoyable talk about one of man's best friends, the Greyhound. Learn about the history of the Greyhound, discuss proper obedience and training techniques, and find out more about the Greyhound racing industry and what they are doing to help the adoption effort of the former race stars. If you own a Greyhound or just love dogs like I do, join me for Greyhounds Make Great Pets every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific right here on America's Voice. VoiceAmerica.com.
Conversation at a click of a mouse. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to Together in Spirit with Indigo Ocean. If you have a question or comment, call us toll free 1-866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Indigo.
Hi, welcome back to Together in Spirit. We're speaking today with Zen teacher Sherry Huber. And we were talking about this incredible experience that is possible of getting to live in this state of, you know, we didn't put it in these exact terms, but what I'm hearing is I'm kind of connecting the dots is when we're in this witness awareness that we were talking about of the living meditation, if you will, this living awareness, that's when we have this experience of peace and compassion that everyone has been searching for, even though they may not have known that's what it would be like.
Right.
Now, situationally, to make it easier to get used to an experience of being like that, you know, I've had the desire, I think a lot of people, I'm sure, have had the desire to get to be in a situation where a lot of people are doing the same thing at the same time. You know, rather than we're going around in our daily, just like we talked about, the seated practice is preparation for going out into daily life. Well, in a sense, getting to live in a community where everyone is supporting the same idea can be also be a great practice for going into the marketplace where everybody just wants to get what they can get.
Right. Yeah.
So what are some of the things? I know you've created a number of different things for people.
Right. Well, and a lot of it stems from exactly what you've said. You know, there a person is living at home, feeling kind of isolated, trying to figure out what to do, knowing that they're a spiritual person or they want to wake up or they want to end suffering or their life isn't working or whatever it is, but how do you do that? How do you really make that happen? You go to work, you seem to work with a whole bunch of people who have no interest in this, or maybe you live with a whole bunch of people who have no interest in this, and you just really feel like the Lone Ranger. So connecting people, which you're doing, obviously, connecting like-minded, like-hearted people so that there's, first of all, there is that feeling of, I'm not the only one out here. And then, to me, what happens is that the more I have that experience, the more I want it. It ceases fairly quickly to be fun and inspiring and entertaining to always be at odds with the people one is around. And as much as the voice would tell us, well, you know, if you're the right person, you can be happy under any circumstances. You know, you can be working in this hateful circumstance, but if you're really a good spiritual person, you could be happy there. You know, hopefully, and often, we get to the place of saying, no, you know, I would like to be in circumstances where it's easier. Because, at least for me, it's not a contest.
Like,
life is not a contest, you know.
That's right.
Nothing real.
You take the prize, I'll keep the gift.
Yeah. Ego is the only thing that's interested in us suffering. There's nothing in life that is actually supportive of our suffering. So when we get that, then we start wanting to do the kinds of things, be involved with people and be doing things that support our heart or support our authentic nature. And so one of the things that came out of that desire was the work that we do in Africa. We started out in Zimbabwe, and now most of our work is happening in Zambia. And we started working with AIDS orphans, and then we got there. And over time, you know, it's like, well, shoot. You know, in a sense, everybody is an AIDS orphan here, so everybody's hungry. You know, nobody has work, so, all right, you know, how can we help? And one of the things, there are two expressions. One is mine, which is you'll do for the love of others what you would never be willing to do for yourself. And the other is a great woman named Jenny Ditzler, who started Best Year Yet, who says, if you don't have something larger to serve, you'll self-serve. And so the whole idea is finding something that causes us, that opens our hearts enough, that moves us enough, that we say, I don't really care what the voices of ego are saying about my inadequacy or what's wrong with me or any of that. You know, children are starving and I want them to eat, so I'm going to just risk it and go for this. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I got to the place of wanting to involve a lot of people in the lives of people thousands and thousands of miles away. You know, and people will say, well, why don't you do that here? And the only answer I have is because that's not what I was called to do. You know, there are lots of people who are called to do that in the United mm-hmm. States, and I, for whatever reason, am called to do it in Zambia. Just lucky.
You know, it's interesting as you're talking, I don't want to take you off track, but I have to just share with you my person. You know, one of my favorite students of all time, I've taught different things over the years, and my most beloved, you know, my Rinchen, if you would call it, my most beloved student was from Zambia. And actually, one of my greatest interests is in working with orphans created by AIDS. So as you're saying that, I'm like, wow, fascinating.
We're on parallel tracks here.
Yeah. All right, so tell me more. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the whole idea behind that, is wanting to give people an opportunity to see, number one, how good it feels to be doing work that opens your heart and helps you feel connected. What a great way to combat the voices of what I call self-hatred by doing something that just proves to you in ways that you can't deny that, in fact, you are a good person. You know, the voices have a lot of people who are very good people convinced that they're not good people, and we got to turn that around. So the other one, of course, that I'm very passionate about is the Peace Center. And we're creating a Peace Center at the monastery. It's called the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And then we are also creating another Peace Center. It'll be a sister Peace Center in Assisi, Italy. Mm-hmm. And it's designed once again to focus on what includes us all. So it's a center that is for. It's not against anything. It's not concerned about justice. It's not that we don't want justice. It's just that we don't want to enter the dualistic world of these people are right and these people are wrong. We just simply want to help people find one another, you know, hold hands, open their hearts, go to that place of interconnectedness and compassion for all, and then practice living together in that place, as with obviously the goal of transforming lives and affecting the world.
So it's peacemaking within the group there of trying to live in a peaceful
yes.
community.
Yes. And here, in the States, we do that because we live in that environment that is, it's focused on sustainability, so it's taking care of the earth, it's taking care of, the creatures that share the environment with us. It's learning how to, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, walk lightly on the earth. And so practicing that and then also practicing self-acceptance, which, of course, leads naturally to acceptance for one another. And so creating a physical place where people can come and feel what it feels like to be able to actually relax into acceptance, compassion, and peace. And practice that, then be able to take that into their lives, to begin to practice it with their families and where they work and in their communities and like that.
Okay, so the first work that you were talking about, was that Living Compassion and then...
Yes, well, both of these are actually projects of Living Compassion. So what we're doing is taking sort of the benefits and the practice of Zen awareness training and bringing it into the larger community so that people have different ways of accessing it. You know, not everyone is cut out to live in a silent Zen monastery. You know, people...
At least not for long.
That's right. These people have other things that they want to do. You know, they have things like relationships. They have children. You know, they have jobs and things like that. So how do we all practice together and participate together where we are rather than holding... Again, you know, in meditation, we don't want to have an ideal of a state that precludes our lives.
That's a really key idea.
Yeah. And so in life, we don't want to have an idea of spirituality or interconnectedness that leaves us out of it. So if I'm, in fact, you're probably familiar with this, but there's a great old Zen koan, a spiritual puzzle that masters give to students to help them awaken. And so there's the master, and the young doctor comes for to learn Zen awareness practice, and the master says, "Be kind to your patients." And so the doctor goes away, and you know he's kind of scratching his head, and he's thinking, "Gee, what, you know?" And every time he comes back in true Zen fashion, you know, the master just says the same thing: "Be kind to your patients." And finally, you know, like a year or 2 years have gone by, and the guy is just pulling out his hair. You know, what does this mean? What are you talking about? What does this have to do with Zen? You know, I want to study Zen. And the master says, "Oh, I can see that that was a mistake. That was too hard a practice for you. Let me give you a koan." And so he gave him something like, "What is the sound of one hand clapping?" Because most people would think, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Now, that sounds like really hard practice. But right. That's really easy practice compared to be kind to your family or be kind to your patients. That's hard practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a Buddhist teacher on some weeks ago, and I remember him talking about students who just become fascinated with the idea of the practice, and it becomes like a pastime or, you know, but to actually the motivation to actually change their lives and how they relate to people isn't actually there.
That's right. Well, my way of saying that would be I come to this practice to enhance my identity, and the practice is actually to dissolve the identity.
See, it's tricky because the part of you that decides to enter the practice at all, to take the time, to go to the meetings, to learn, to buy the books, you know, et cetera, that's the part that you're really, the practice is meant to free you from.
Well, see, I think that what we begin to see is that both of those things are always on parallel tracks. So there's my heart, my true nature, authenticity, what it, you know, that deep longing for peace, for home, that deep longing to enjoy life, to be all right, to be loving, to be kind. Okay? Huge. I mean, that is who we are. So that's always there. And then there's the ego, which is this layer over the top that says, yes, I want all of that, but most important, I want what I want when I want it. Okay? And so both of those appear at every stage of our lives. So I'm suddenly drawn to, say, meditation practice. Well, it's my heart that's bringing me there. But ego is going to be right there saying, okay, all right, I can do this. Let's see, what books should I read? What workshops should I go to? You know, what really works for me? What fits into my... Okay? But they're both traveling along together. And so people will often say to me, yeah, but, you know, you sound so hard on the ego. And I don't mean to sound hard on the ego. It's just that it's the source of our suffering. And so people will say things like, but isn't conditioned mind or ego, isn't it handy? You know, can't it do errands and go to the grocery store and do all of this? And my response to that always is, why would you want to do that? Why would you want ego to go shopping? This is how we
come
have
back with stuff that's going to kill you.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, this is where credit card debt comes from. You know, this is where obesity and diabetes and, you know, it come from, is letting ego make those kinds of life decisions for us. So it's always going to be there, angling to be the center of the universe. And our practice is to constantly notice it and allow it, but not feed it, not reinforce it, but instead to come back to authenticity.
And to act from there.
Yeah, yeah. And without self-hatred. Okay, so, you know, it suddenly occurs to me that, gosh, I've been a selfish so-and-so for a long time. Maybe I'd like to wake up and be a better person. Ego is going to take charge of making sure that that happens in a way that causes the maximum amount of suffering.
I want to talk more about self-love and compassion towards the self when we come back. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back with more of Sherry Heber, so stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
From our home to your speakers, VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you ever wonder where your life is taking you? What is your true calling? Are your relationships serving your path? Sometimes it helps to talk to a gifted advisor who can help you bring the beauty of spiritual wisdom into your own life to answer these questions and other important questions. You can find top psychic advisors on Keen. They'll give you accurate readings on relationships, health, work, whatever's on your mind. Want to talk to a psychic advisor at Keen right now? This is a great time to do it, because right now, Keen has a special deal for Together in Spirit listeners. You get a full 10-minute reading for just $1.99. You heard that right, 10 minutes for just $1.99. Call 1-800-648-1417 to talk with a psychic advisor now. That's 1-800-648-1417. Or visit beingblissbook.com for more details. You must be 18 years old and have a credit card ready. Call 1-800-648-1417. Don't struggle another day in confusion. Get help to find the answers you need now.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Internet's premier talk radio station, VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to Together in Spirit with Indigo Ocean. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free 1-866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Indigo.
Hi, welcome back to Together in Spirit. So, Sherry, we were speaking a bit before about how the ego comes up so many times during life, during meditation, just basically all the time, of criticizing itself. It criticizes how we pursue the spiritual path.
Yeah.
Criticizes how we meditate.
Yeah.
Coming into a place of peacefulness and compassion in how we relate to ourselves, how do we do that?
Well, you know, that's so great. It's really, really simple. But all of our conditioning goes against it. So, for instance, if I want to be happy in life, the shortcut to being happy in life is just to be fine with everything as it is.
Okay.
Can you picture it? So, So, if I don't have an idea, if I don't have expectations, if I don't have ideas about how I should be, if I don't have all of these standards, then there's really nothing to criticize. So it's this imaginary world of the way I should be and the way life should be that causes the suffering. And that's the world of conditioning or the world of ego. If everything the way it is the way I want it to be, and a simple way of saying that is, if I just say yes to life, then there's no struggle. Now, if we're not defending an identity, once again, it's hard to be criticized. So if I say something, and it was really stupid, and the voice says, that was really stupid, and I just say, yeah, it was, wasn't it? And I don't take it personally, I don't take it on, I don't feel bad, I'm a happy human. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. But
being
the world...
forgiving, it's like, I'm hearing it's like I'm being forgiving and allowing towards one's imperfections.
Well, yes, or not even believing that there are imperfections. So if, you know, when Jesus said, you must become as little children, to me this is what he was talking about. Now, we're around little children, those of us who like little children, okay, because some people don't, I understand that, and then I try... Okay, how about little animals? There must be a little something you like. And
little chocolate drops.
Little chocolate drops, yeah. And so these little things, we find them endearing and charming. Even though like I have a granddaughter. She's she's just starting to walk. I call her Baby Frankenstein. Okay, you know, she puts her arms out and then she does this stiff-legged little walk around, you know, and she is adorable. Now, if I had to walk like that, there might be a critical voice. Okay? And of course, there are people who have to walk like that if they're going to walk because they've got some sort of condition that means that's, you know, and so the self-hatred, the judgment, the criticism, if we are in that attitude of mind of acceptance of what is, of innocence, of defenselessness, of vulnerability, if you will, then everything that happens to a person can be actually seen in that same way. And without the criticism, without the judgment, without that voice saying that there's something wrong, if you really just get to know yourself as you really are, there's nothing not to like.
Even the mistakes, even the wrong turns that lead to what seems like disasters or losses.
And yet, when we look back, when has there ever been a wrong turn that led to disaster? Never. There have been turns that led us to things that we would have liked to have avoided for the rest of our lives. But is that necessarily a mistake? The voice is constantly saying, yes, but you should have, or if you do, if you would, if this, and create this illusion of this parallel reality in which ego always has what it wants. But in life, you know, we can come through the most god-awful, disastrous circumstances and usually, often, get to the other side and say, you know, I hope nothing like that ever happens to me again. But it was one of the most profound experiences of my life. I wouldn't choose to be the person I was before this happened because I'm so much kinder. I'm so much wiser. I'm so much more accepting, whatever it is. So when we look back on our lives, we're often very grateful for all of the things that happened to us, no matter how rugged they were.
You know, I have to admit, I was in New York. One of the most profound and affecting events of my life was the Trade Center disaster in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in New York then, and actually I'd had this dream of it happening the night before, even though I didn't, you know, see the planes hitting the building, but I saw myself out in the streets with all these people trying to go north and trying to get away from some horrible thing that had happened in the south. And that's what I wound up doing the very next morning, and it was incredibly traumatic for me for a really long time. I, you know, just, you know, all the post-traumatic stress disorder and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, for years after it, and then when the New Orleans things happened again, you know, some months ago, it brought it back even more strongly, and just feeling this sense of, God, if only I could have done more then, if only I could have been stronger. But then I realized only, you know, recently, since New Orleans and coming to terms with that, was that I learned where my growth was. I learned where, you know, I had new frontier to grow, and so that was something that came out of that. I mean, I wish we had more time to talk. I'm just realizing that we're really short on time right now.
Well, let's do this again.
Yeah, let's definitely do this again. There's so many more things I want to talk about. We never even talked about enlightenment. How could I talk to a Buddhist teacher and not talk about enlightenment?
That's three shows right there.
But I do want to also get out your website information so people can follow up and learn more about your work. And I think that's sherryhuber.com, sherryhuber.com.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so everyone, please do go and find out more about the wonderful work that, you know, these great books you have. I love one title, When You're Falling, Dive. I love that one.
Yeah.
Great books, many great resources, sherryhuber.com. Thank you so much for being on the show, Sherry.
It has been a joy. Thank you.
And that's our show for today, everybody. I hope you found it moving and insightful. I know I did. And next week we'll be joined by the teachers from Nonviolent Communication, who will be sharing with us their insight on how NVC can be used to get to the root of conflict and help us use communication to meet our needs more effectively. So I hope you'll join us then. And remember, just for Together in Spirit listeners, Keene offers a 10-minute reading with their advisors for just $1.99. Their number is 800-648-1417, 800-648-1417. Have a wonderful week ahead. I'll see you again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for another hour spent remembering that we are together in spirit. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to Together in Spirit. To contact Indigo, visit beingblissbook.com. Tune in next Tuesday for another inspiring hour of Together in Spirit with Indigo Ocean.